that Knight and Hayes and coaches like that are kind of dinosaurs. The dinosaurs didn't die. You know, yes, a planet, a meteor hit the Earth and killed the dinosaurs, but it didn't happen overnight. They walked around for a while till, you know, the food gave out and mm-hmm. such. So there are still coaches very much like that. But I think that mentality is really dying out. And if you look at, you know, the successful coaches today, they're much smoother.
Well, with Bobby Knight and some of the other examples that you've given, you know, it kind of rose to the level of a big public display of some sort of crisis that drove change.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, how do you change a culture around athletics, a culture of maybe that is set from, and again, we don't know what's happening here, but it certainly
right.
is putting a lot of scrutiny on the program. You know, how do you ensure that a culture is a culture of, you know, of respect?
I think as these incidents happen, calls attention to it. I don't know if you remember, a year or two ago, men's basketball coach at Rutgers, there was a film of him vilifying his players
mm-hmm.
in, you know, most obscene language and throwing basketballs at them and all of that. And it crossed the line and for about 2-3 weeks became a national story. And Rutgers had to ask him to resign and such. I assume the new basketball coach at Rutgers doesn't behave that way. I think also one of the things that's happening is that players won't accept it, you know, won't accept that kind of treatment. And it often becomes a black-white thing, a racial question. And certainly African-American athletes will not accept the kind of treatment that they would say in the starting in the 1970s or even in the 60s when college sports started to integrate. So therefore, you know, something like the segregated practices and such just, you know, it's such a deep insult for the African-American players that they won't accept it.
And that's one of the things we heard about. There was one of the letters from a parent alleged that the women's
right.
basketball coach considered having separate practices for African-American
right.
players.
Right.
So you talked about the one thing it sounds like that's changing is among the players who come in and you know, have a different experience coming into this level of play and are not willing to put up with it and speak out, at least in
right.
some cases that we're seeing here, whether it be through Twitter or through letters from parents and other things to school officials. What about on the university side, do you think? I mean, what can and should a university do and what responsibility do they have when allegations like this
right.
come out?
I think universities should be more aggressive. When they hire a coach, they make the coach read the code of conduct and sign it. But very often, the athletic department has a different code than the regular university code for the thing that would get faculty fired or lose their tenure and certainly get staff people fired often doesn't apply to athletic department coaches and such and staff people. And it's the question about, you know, sports and, you know, where does kind of regimented behavior become bullying behavior. But I think what the universities can do is just let's enforce the same rules that apply to every faculty member with authority over students. Every staff member should apply to every coach and every staff member in the athletic department in terms of their treatment of students, which includes, of course, verbal harassment and not simply physical harassment.
And what about, I mean, there will be some people, including some players, you know, who will come out and say, this is part of the game, you know, that you're making too big a deal out of this. Name-calling is always been part of the culture around this. What's the problem?
Well, I guess my response is you're supposed to be a college student. So you should, and the NCAA rules are based on there should be no difference between a regular college student and a student athlete. So just as you accept the rules of conduct of the University of Illinois for, you know, your classroom conduct, you're not allowed to plagiarize, various other things. Also, you're not allowed to make racial threats to to any other student or any person, actually, in the town, you should accept this for playing sport.
Hmm. And you would, have you seen, is there a school that's doing this well, a major level athletic conference school that's doing this well, do you think?
Well, there's a whole other school of coaching that is much more cooperative. Yes, the coach is the authority, but he has to get, or she has to get the players to buy into the system and such, and it has to be done in a much more cooperative kind of way. And there's new theories of coaching around this, and there are young coaches who are trying this who seem to be succeeding. Now, to change the culture, you would need a number of these coaches who believe in, call it anti-kick-ass coaching or cooperative coaching, to really win at the national level, to win an NCAA tournament or the number one football championship and such, to get more. I mean, coaches are very imitative of successful coaches, mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons that the Bob Knight system continued so long. But I'm optimistic.
As we think about the investigation, particularly around the football case, because I'm not sure what's going on with the basketball, although they continue to say they're looking into, you know, the letters from the parents and some of the allegations and things. But as any investigation continues, whether it's handled by the university, as in the case of the basketball program here, or by an outside firm, in the case of the football program here,
right.
What are you looking for as an investigation goes through to ensure that it is a solid investigation?
Well, the problem with all the investigations, including the NCAA investigations, is they don't have subpoena power. They don't. They are not legal court investigations. So, therefore, when you have subpoena power, people have to tell the truth, or there's various serious consequences, including contempt of court and such. People have gone to jail for lying under oath and such.
Mm-hmm.
But the University of Illinois can't make these people swear an oath, nor can the outside law firm they've hired. Now, these people are skilled, and hopefully people will tell the truth, but it's often very hard to get to the truth in these matters. And in the same way, in professional sports, this whole Deflategate, this Wells report, at one level seems very damning, but at another level says Tom Brady probably knew. They never come out and say he actually knew,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't have subpoena power and they can't get those people who deflated the balls to say Brady called me up and did such and such. And if they had done that, I don't know. So these types of investigations are always dependent on the goodwill. Well, if the university is aggressive, if the outside firm is aggressive and skillful, they can often kind of trap people in contradictions and make them tell the truth. They can't actually make them. And especially if these people bring in lawyers or bring in advisors to the interviews, you're often, they just stonewall and such. So what comes out of the investigation at best is like the Wells investigation of Brady, where the circumstantial evidence seems very, very strong. Although Brady is suing, you know. In fact, he may make that fatal error that Oscar Wilde and various other people have made historically of going to court. And once, if he sues and they go to court, then he's under oath. Then, he can't smile and mug for the camera like he did at that Salem University thing and things like that. So, and often when, if you remember Alex Rodriguez, the baseball player, threatened mm-hmm. to go to court and such, in the end he didn't. And so it's really, as an observer of it, sometimes interesting things turn up, but it's hard to take this as, real evidence.